Hello, and welcome to Medicine in the Kitchen, where we empower you with simple solutions to everyday health concerns. Welcome back to Medicine in the Kitchen, episode 66. Once again, I'm Hesul.
And I'm Felicia, and we're your guides to empowered health.
So today we're going to be talking about breast health, and I think it's something super important, not just for women, but for men as well. But it's definitely something that is more relatable to women.
I always forget about men when we talk about breasts, but yeah, women definitely have a lot more tissue there and can have a lot more that can go wrong. Or go right.
You're right. You're 100% right. And breast cancer affects, you know, mainly women, but it does affect men.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this may not fully apply to you if you're male presenting in any sort of way, but it's always good to have this in the back of your mind, not just for yourself, but for your partner if you have a female partner.
Yeah, partners or even loved ones, sisters, mm-hmm. moms.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, so I know we're going to start with talking about like getting to know your breasts, but I feel like it might be kind of helpful to sort of start with the screening guidelines, because I went over the most recent guidelines and it was actually pretty interesting. So I don't know how much you know about the screening guidelines.
I don't really know about screening guidelines. I know a little bit about self-examination and like different things. And I did look a few things up as well. So like I knew about touching and like some of the visual stuff, but like they've updated it a lot more to like look at your breasts in different positions and things. And I was like, I've never done that before.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like good guidelines. The most recent ones that I've looked at are from 2018. Mm-hmm. So they came up with some new guidelines in 2018 where it was very, very much, because in the past it was like, get a mammogram once you turn 50 and do regular breast exams. And I found the new guidelines are very much like, they don't recommend self-breast exams, actually.
Really?
Yeah, and they don't recommend the doctor to do a breast exam either, so like clinical exams. With that, they also note that there's little to no evidence either way on both of those. So that's the guideline, but there isn't much evidence supporting that.
I'm kind of like not happy with that.
Yeah, I read that too. And I mean, I can kind of see where they're coming from, because I think the reason why they updated these exams, and I'll get into the mammography stuff in a second, but they updated it because there's a lot of false positives that happen in breast cancer, where mm-hmm. you find something that isn't quite what you would expect, and then go through the whole process of biopsy or removing it or all that anxiety of I might have breast cancer, and it was leading to more harm than good. So I get it from that side, but I also think that if you're familiar with your breasts on a regular basis, then you know what's normal and you know what's not. And it's almost,
that's where I was gonna get to that.
Yeah, it's almost less likely to get false positives like that because you're just more familiar with your breasts and less anxious.
Yeah, you know, and I know that you have it on our list, but like if you know that a certain like lymph node feels a little more tender, or you suddenly feel it a lot stronger when it's a certain part of your menstrual cycle, okay, sure, you know. But that's because you've like self-examined yourself, you got you comfortable with your breasts and know what you're looking for. Like, you know, like to me that makes a lot more sense, like what you're saying, like you know when something's wrong, because like, oh, that's new. Maybe I should go see my doctor and see if that's something that's bad or something like that. But if you don't know and you're not comfortable with knowing your breast and something that, you know, could be bad, you wouldn't notice, and something that's totally normal, you'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to die in 7 days kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I do think it's important to get to know your breasts. With that, though, I think the education piece and having someone supporting that process is really important too, because if you're kind of going in there for the first time and you don't really know what to expect or what your breasts feel like, that's when anxiety can happen and those false diagnoses or whatnot. And I often find too, a lot of the time, people who don't really do self breast exams or aren't familiar with their breast tissue as much, it'll be not until a partner notices something, and it might it might be something that was always there, but now someone else has noticed and you're not as familiar, so it causes some anxiety there.
No, I totally agree. And it depends, like when you're saying education and stuff like that, I know that my mom used to bring home the breast cancer flyers and stuff like that. And so like you read some of the risk factors, you know, like being female. Okay. Yeah. I checked that box. Thank you very much. Right. And you keep going through a bunch of the things. And like, sometimes you see this when you're younger and you're like, oh, like one of them is like starting your period at a younger age before 12, and like different things, or like how many women nowadays are choosing not to have children or having children after the age of 30. And like one of those risk factors is like having your first child at an older age, and it's like after age 30 and not breastfeeding. I'm like, well now, like what can we do, right? Like people start panicking when they start like checking off these things, and they're like, oh my God. And if you're not used to checking, and or a partner says, hey, did you notice you have this kind of thing, you just keep building up these anxieties, and that actually does more harm than good. And then, like you said, it kind of goes a little crazy. And I don't know. I still think that you should definitely do your own check, go to the doctor every once in a while, get it checked out and make sure everything's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it becomes hard too, because if the recommendation is not to do clinical breast exams, I mean, that explains. And I know when we were preparing for this episode, we talked a little bit about how a lot of family doctors don't really do breast exams anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if they're following the recommendation, I guess that makes sense. But then I'm also like, if your family doctor is not familiar with your normal or what your breasts look like on a normal basis, then when you do have those issues come up, they're not gonna know if that's normal for you or if it's new, if you don't know that either.
And who's going to teach you how to do the self-examination as well?
Yeah, exactly. And I would imagine that if you're not doing breast exams in practice anymore, you probably sort of lose the skill of doing it. I think that they're a valuable tool in practice.
I think so too. And breasts come in all different shapes and sizes. And if you aren't used to seeing the difference, how are you going to know what's normal and what's not?
Exactly. Exactly. And then I can see that leading to a lot of hesitancy in general to even do a breast exam, because it's like, well, I'm not really sure, so let's just send for imaging. Which... and we'll get into that too. And I think imaging can be a useful tool, but also imaging has its limitations as well. So like the mammogram, so the guidelines around the mammogram are it's not recommended under 50. But they looked at its usefulness in like people 40 to 47.
Mm-hmm.
And found that the risk of it sort of outweighed the benefits. But the recommendation around that is to make sure that you inform the patient about the risks and benefits and let them make their own decision, which I think is a great approach to that.
It is, but I have never heard a doctor tell me the risks of mammograms.
Right? So ideally, that's a good approach if it's put into practice. But yeah, they're, I think, and I'm trying to remember what risks they outlined, but kind of thinking through it I feel like going through a mammogram, first of all, it's super uncomfortable. And then you have the anxiety that comes with it. And then mm-hmm. you have the false positives, which if you're not familiar with your breasts and something comes up in the mammogram, and mammograms are not, I mean, a radiologist who reads them would read them a lot better than I can, but it's not like you clearly have this thing on it that's like, oh yeah, I know what that is. They're a little bit ambiguous, and that's why it usually leads to more testing and biopsy and all of that. And it's, I feel like it, in my mind, I'm like, it would be better to have more tools and to like know what your breasts feel like before going for the mammogram.
I agree. And I'm pretty sure there are a bunch of different tools. And I mentioned one of them, the Sigma Boob.
Yeah. Do you wanna explain the thingamaboo? Because I think that's kind of cool.
I mean, I got a little bit wrong when I talked to you about it because I didn't fully remember what it was. I haven't had mine in a long, long time, and I lost a little paper. Mm-hmm. So, you can get them online, and I know you can also get them at the breast cancer centers. And there's these little keychains. They have like 3 to 4 little balls or beads on them. And the biggest one is like, what, the size of a marble max? And it is literally like, if you do your own breast check, that is what a lump might feel like. So it feels really, really large. And then the next one is like, if you go for a professional exam, it's smaller, and that's what the person feels. And then the next one is like, if you are, it's like really teeny. It's not teeny teeny, but it's like pretty small. It's like one of those you would see on beaded jewelry, like the ones that kids used to make. And that is like, if you go to your first mammogram and like it's something that's been detected that could possibly be like an issue, that's usually about the size. And then the smallest bead, which is literally a teeny teeny thing, is like, if you go have your regular mammograms, like what you were saying, like once every 2 years for, I think it's like 60 and over, and like once a year for, I think 50, or I don't really remember that, but that's like, if you go for regular mammograms, what they see. So it's kind of like makes it like, again, like you get to know your breasts, you get to know what is normal/average. And I say that with big quotation marks. And it's a little bit less scary.
Yeah, totally. And the, so I just wanted to jump in there again with the recommendation. So above 50, they recommend mammograms every 2 to 3 years. Again, providing the risks and benefits and letting patient decide if that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the other thing that kind of came to mind as you were kind of talking about that, and it's, I feel like it's the approach to how you do a breast exam, and I love the thingamaboo because it makes it fun, right? Like you're not looking for something wrong necessarily. You're looking to see what's up and what your breasts are like and
what's normal.
Yeah, and sort of getting familiar with that and realizing that, yeah, we all have lumps and bumps in our breasts. And one of the most common things I see, actually, especially in sort of not even older women, like usually after like 25, maybe, I see a lot of like scar tissue in breasts from wearing bras. So there's so many different things that you can feel in your breasts. So yeah, just getting familiar with that and realizing that it's not making it less scary, I guess.
And also knowing the fact that, you know, as you get older, your breasts change, they grow with you, right? So like, they're not going to be the same as when you first got them to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
They change in size based on also your weight. Mm-hmm. Breast tissue is mostly fat. And yeah, gravity does affect them. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you have to know what your breasts look like, how they age, and be okay with it. Mind you, yes, it's great to, you know, check and be like, is there like dimpling happening? Is the nipple becoming inverted? Is there a lot of swelling underneath the armpit? That is something that's more concerning, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And if you're doing sort of regular checks, those are things that you would start to notice.
Mm-hmm.
And
the visual one that I really liked was like checking your breasts with your arms beside you so that you can see them like that. Then the other one was putting your hands on your hips to check it. And I was like, okay, I guess that would change the shape. I'm not really fully sure. And then like, obviously the basic raise your arms against your head kind of thing. Or like putting your palms together to kind of check for symmetry and different things. But like, yeah, there were a few that I didn't even consider. But hey, you're going to go into the shower. Quick visual check never hurts.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like not necessarily looking for things that are wrong, but
mm-hmm.
just seeing what your breasts look like. And then when things do look off, that's when it's time to go get another opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You said that your breasts change with age. Not even just with age, but like in the month, your breasts change, like they change with your cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So realizing too that like if all of a sudden you're feeling more bumps closer to your period, maybe that's more an indication of what's going on with your hormones, and paying attention to kind of how your breasts might change throughout your cycle, or maybe they're a little bit more sore before your period, and kind of paying attention to those things as well.
Or like sensitive nipples and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Which when you actually start talking to other women, you realize it is pretty common right before period.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I often will ask about breast tenderness before a period when I'm doing like an initial intake. And it's like some people don't even realize that that's normal or are like, well, like I never really paid attention to it. But now that you mention it. So yeah, I think it's great to pay attention to those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you wanted to talk about like the examination, like self-examination, how to do it and like different stuff like that?
Yeah. So yeah, I like how you mentioned sort of the visual, like looking first. And I when I talk about self-examination, I'm kind of like my overarching thing is I'm like, I just want to be like, just pay attention and like get familiar with your breasts like you kind of do with the rest of your body. But if you want to kind of go into sort of some steps to do that, like you mentioned, the visual. So the doing the different positions puts your muscles sort of in a different position and lifts the breast tissue in different ways. So that can be helpful for looking for things like the dimpling that you mentioned, or mm-hmm. even just kind of looking to see symmetry and your breasts might not be symmetrical and that might be normal for you. So just sort of paying attention to things like that. And then once you kind of do the visual inspection, that's where you sort of start to go to palpate or sort of feel what might be happening. So you talked a little bit about the lymph nodes. So you do have quite a few lymph nodes in there sort of under your arm and around the breast, sort of on the side. So kind of starting under your arm and feeling, I would even say you could feel like right down to your elbow and just sort of under the arm sort of there, move up toward right under your arm. And there you're just sort of feeling for what's there. And if something's going on with your lymphatic system, you might feel little nodules. You might feel some tenderness. You might not feel really anything different there. And I find too, the more you start feeling for things, the more accustomed you get to sort of what things feel like. So a lot of the time when you're first going in, and even I remember starting to learn how to do a breast exam on someone else when I was in school, it was like, I don't feel anything. Like it feels like an arm. Like I don't feel anything. So it takes some time to sort of get used to what things feel like and sort of fine tune your palpation skills or your fingers to sort of feel for things. So yeah, just kind of starting going in there and again, approaching it as like a fun thing to get to know your body. And yeah, so that's sort of going from the elbow down under the arm and then just sort of a little bit down your side. I would say just sort of going, and it might be a little too far if you're going like down to under your breasts where the ribs are, but why not? Just sort of feel what all of that feels like.
There is no harm in checking all that out.
Exactly. And again, you're not necessarily looking for something wrong. You're just seeing what it feels like. And then once you kind of go through that, you can sort of move on to the breasts. So the way I kind of like to do it so that I sort of cover everything, well, I guess you could first sort of start more superficial or on the surface. So just sort of gently feeling what your breasts feel on sort of like the top level. Mm-hmm. And you can do that with your arm down and compare it to what it feels like with your arm up. And
the same with like laying down versus standing up kind of thing.
You read my mind. That's what I was going to say next. Yeah, because it does make a difference. And I almost don't want to tell you what the difference is because you'll figure it out for yourself pretty quick, I think. But yeah, so laying down sort of spreads the tissue out more so that you can sort of feel deeper and feel more what's going on there. And then, so once you kind of start trying to feel deeper and, again, sort of play around with it. Start sort of top level, press harder, just play around with your pressure to see what the different levels sort of feel like. And to kind of make sure that I'm covering the whole breast, I usually start at the nipple and I'll just start above the nipple. So you want to palpate the nipple as well. You want to see what that feels like. And even checking for discharge or anything around there. So kind of starting there. And then I'll usually just sort of go in circles around that and just make my circles bigger and bigger as I go toward the outside of the breast. And that's usually how I make sure that I'm covering all of the tissue.
And you want to use more like the pad of your finger, not so much the tips.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess like for another reference of what kind of feels like, if anybody's ever made like fresh dinner rolls, the dough before you pop it in the oven, it's nice and soft. Generally, that's what more of a breast-like tissue feels like. Now, imagine like at first you start like going around, it's still soft and like regular. And as you add more pressure, you're going to start feeling, let's say, a chocolate chip. You're going to start feeling a bit of like the chocolate chips inside that dinner roll and so on and so forth. So some areas, yeah, it's going to be a little bit more, there's going to be a few more chocolate chips there than in other areas, or it's been, like you said, the bra, the scar tissue, it's gonna be there. So like that, I don't know if that gives a little bit more of a visual representation of what we're trying to talk about or what is kind of normal-ish.
That's fantastic. I love your food analogies. They're always so good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way, but yeah, that's a great way to describe it.
And I guess we can sort of start talking about, like we mentioned, the scar tissue from the breast. We can talk about bras.
Yeah.
The many, many words for bras, like boob jail.
Boob jail. I like it.
What was the other one I've heard? Over-the-shoulder boulder holders? Yeah. Yes.
Over-the-shoulder boulder holders?
Mm-hmm.
That's a mouthful.
I know, but it's funny when people say things like that. I'm like, yes, I agree. Well, I mean, knowing the fact that not all stores, for some reasons, though, if you're a size A, you might be a size B in another store, which I don't understand why women's sizes can never be the same, regardless of what store or what you're buying, but being okay with them. Knowing also that even though people at La Zenza or other stores are trained to measure bra sizes, it's not the same as going to a professional and specialized bra store, like a lingerie store. Those are a little bit harder to find, but they are better trained. So that might be a huge thing. And also not being ashamed of whether you're a busty girl or somebody that's a little bit smaller and knowing what bra is right for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all really important things to mention, I think, because I'm thinking even, so I think it's great that we're both commenting on bra sizes here, because I think we have sort of different challenges when it comes to bras. And for me, it was like, I was like, oh, like, I don't really need a bra at this point. Like when I was going through the whole stage of figuring out how to wear bras and all that, I was like, I don't think I really need it, but it's something that we have to do, right? So like, I kind of put myself through wearing a bra when I didn't really need to have a bra with an underwire. Like, I didn't need that support. So now I'm like, I created all that scar tissue under my breast for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, knowing that information and not kind of trying to, I mean, yeah, I think you said it best when you're like, knowing what's best for you and what works for you and accepting your body as it is.
And honestly, sometimes your parents may not know. They're doing their best. They have their toolkit. They're trying to do their best during the toolkit. And for me, my example was I went to the biggest size I could find at Lazenza because we didn't know anything else, right? We didn't know those specialty lingerie stores existed. Yes, the bras are way more expensive, but it's so much more comfortable and enjoyable to like walk around with. And one of the main reasons I ended up at these places was because I used to do a lot of sports. And Lazenza sports, no, they didn't have the sports bras back then. Lazenza bras with the wire and the really thin straps and the two little hooks at the back were not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They were so not doing it. So I ended up going to the doctors because I teared a couple things. That's how I found out about these places. You should always make sure that you have thicker straps to hold the weight and also a thicker band. That is very, very helpful. And when you're trying to get a bra on, one of the tips that I got from the ladies at the bra store that I love, which shout out to them, it's Good Nights, Good Morning in Bronte Road in Oakville. They are fantastic. Wonderful people, is you put your hand in an angle so that it's just resting by your chest in a way, like by your side so you can see it. The bra strap on your breast should not be hanging at your elbow. So like if the band is above that, it's bad. It should be like right around there and your breast should not be hanging that low. I've seen people, both busty and non, where there's really no point in them wearing the bra. Like the back is all the way up and the rest is hanging low, right? So there's a lot of things that you can look into that. Try to check that out. Definitely get a sports bra. They're good for multiple reasons. And if anybody wants to see fun little comics that also speak the truth, there is this wonderful comic artist that was on Tumblr when Tumblr was alive. And she does a busty girl comics. Now, it's not just busty girls. It's stuff any woman can kind of be like, yep, I've had that issue with bras or whatever it might be. But it's fascinating. It's fascinating to see like different little things. It's like, yeah, I can relate to that. Or, oh my God. So it is normal that bras squeak sometimes when you walk kind of thing. So it's really nice, especially if you feel like that's not you. And she does do comics with women with smaller breasts, even though she mainly focuses on busty girls, but it is good stuff. It is in a way educational, and I don't know, give it a try. Maybe it will help normalize a few things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds great. And yeah, some of that stuff that you mentioned, I didn't even really think about or know. Like you said, it's normal for, did you say bras to sweep?
Squeak.
Squeak. Okay. That makes more sense. I was like, what does that mean?
No squeak.
Okay. Yeah. I think things are getting better now with education around bras and breast health and all of that, which is nice. Because I feel like in the past that was a topic that wasn't really talked about, and I had my mom to talk about it with, and sometimes friends too, but it was kind of like the blind leading the blind a little bit. Yeah, so I feel like we've kind of covered breast health. Anything else that we should talk about?
Oh, well, foods that help promote healthy breasts in general, it's pretty basic.
Oh my goodness, of course. We have to talk about that.
I mean, I think cruciferous vegetables is a given. It's great for fighting cancer and good for the breasts. Walnuts have amazing omegas, and it's a great substitute for like meat, oily fish for the same reason. Flax seeds, again, and they help also with balancing of the hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Turmeric, which is, you know, anti-inflammatory, as we've said previously.
Mm-hmm.
And just pretty much avoiding a lot of drinking and trying to maintain a healthy diet and staying active. Yes, it might not be fun to run around with larger boobs, but find a sport that works for you, or an exercise that works for you and makes you feel comfortable and happy in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And with the information you just shared about supportive bras when working out, that should help as well.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's lots of things you can do. Lots of things, lots of foods. Lentils are also really great and wonderful meat substitutes. Pretty much antioxidants. A lot of antioxidants in food can help promote healthy breasts. And do not try the myth of like eating a lot of cheese and fats will help produce bigger breasts, because I have seen people that do that and think that, you know, by just eating that, they can stay thin and improve the size of their breasts. Yes, breasts are made of fat, but that's not exactly how that works.
Yeah, I don't think it targets just your breasts. You might get bigger breasts, but you might also get bigger everywhere else too.
Right? It's not exactly like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think like we talked about all the stuff we could talk about. And I think at the end of the day, it's more of try to be healthy, get good supporting bras, do your self-examination, know your breasts, get comfortable with them, get a good back massage, because those girls can be heavy.
Yeah. And actually, talking about massages, even breast massages or massaging the lymphatics under the arms, like we talked about, can mm-hmm. be super helpful too, to do that on a regular basis.
Hmm.
Sometimes I'll even tell people to add castor oil to help increase circulation there.
Huh. I will have to try that. That seems kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess personally, I will say, if you see a girl that has a flatter chest, don't judge them harshly. And if you see a girl with a bustier size, don't judge them too harshly either. Like, they might still be young and they just either have a bigger size, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, yeah, don't judge them at all. And don't judge yourself either. Because I found for me, I would judge myself harder than people around me.
I agree. I agree. And don't believe everything you see in like cartoons about how boobies move. That is not accurate either.
Yeah. Yes.
People who are on the internet know exactly what I'm talking about. There are some shows that you're just like, no. No, that's not how. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess like if you guys have any more questions or anything, let us know. Do check out that comic. It is hilarious. I don't know. I think that's all for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all for me too. We covered quite a bit. We went over the screening guidelines and what we thought about them.
Mm-hmm.
We went over doing a self-breast exam and getting familiar with your chest. We talked about bras. We talked about foods that help support breast health. We talked a little bit about self-care and massaging your back massaging your back in general, I think is good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Self-breast massage, massaging the lymphatics, castor oil, and amazing cartoons. What did you say that cartoon was called again?
Busty Girl Problems, but you can look her up as Busty Girl Comics, but Busty Girl Problems.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I feel like we covered quite a bit.
Oh, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
For busty girls, all hip desk cover reductions. That is something that you should know. However, this is the part where I'm 100% sure you may have to pay a little bit extra for the aesthetic part of it. But it is something that has been known that it causes back problems, and that's why it's covered by OHIP.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I could imagine that would get quite expensive.
Yep. And I'm not sure how it would impact breast milk production. One of my doctors says it affects it. The other one has stated that it has no effect. So that's something to look into, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and also, yeah, always asking, because like you said, with even the mammograms, no one ever told you about the risks of the mammograms. So talking to your doctors about that and asking them, what are the risks? What are the benefits? And sometimes it might cause a little bit anxiety for your doctor because they have to kind of check and look into it. But that means more learning for them and more learning mm-hmm. for you. So definitely ask those questions about any procedure, really.
For sure. For sure.
All right. Well, I think that was great. And
I hope it helps people out.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about cultivating resilience with two special guests. You can support the podcast by donating $1 or more on our Ko-fi page. That's ko-fi.com/medicineinthekitchen. You can rate, comment, and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Invite your friends to join our community and improve their health. You can follow us on our social media, Alicia Senza ND and
Sweet Nutritionista. We will be posting bi-weekly. Thank you for joining us. See you next time and happy.